FAI may go for a short term Kenny contract. If I was Stephen Kenny and they come and say, oh, we'll give you a contract for two more games, I'd be like, nope, nope. Find a new manager, lads. Off you go. Go on, find a new manager and see what happens.
OTB AM live weekday mornings from 7:30 on the OTB Sports app.
OTB AM
with Gillette, proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.
Again, the Premier League is back, and delighted to say Liverpool legend Phil Thompson joins us on the line. Morning to you, Phil.
Good morning, guys. Good morning to you. We'll great, the Premier League's back.
Yeah.
Five mils.
You don't know, well, it could be. We'll see what happens at the weekend. Before we get into the Arsenal game, I wanted to ask you, obviously, Stevie G, big talking point over the last few weeks. He's done his first press conference now. I presume, are you still at that level of contact where you can send him a good luck and strong arm emoji?
Yeah, pretty much. And Gary McAllister and there's other staff members, being quite close to them. I think it's a really good job for Stevie. I thought he'd done absolutely fantastic at Rangers. I thought that was a tough job when he went up there, and he turned it around quicker than what I thought he would do. He brought success. He changed the dynamic, obviously, with Celtic win and everything. And I think Aston Villa has come along just at the right time for him, just the right club. It's not one of those sort of big sort of six clubs, as we like to call them. So I think Aston Villa is just right there. It's still a difficult and a tough job, but I think it's just right for Stevie.
Mm. And for now, all the conversation tends to be dominated by, isn't he ultimately going to Liverpool? I mean, can't it coexist, Phil, that he's wants to go into Villa, make a great success of it, and it's absolutely fine to think that at some point down the track he wants to move on to a bigger club?
You can think of that. That is obviously going to be in everybody's mind. But as I've said to a few people, there's no guarantees that Liverpool... Everybody just thinks that is the step which is Stevie's going to take. What happens if Jurgen Klopp... You know, I know Stevie said he signs a contract for life, but what happens if he signs a new contract now? On Stevie's lifespan at sort of Villa, no matter how good he does, how bad he does, will not sort of transpire that way. So Jurgen Klopp might sign a new contract. That might not come round to Stevie. People's minds were just going, Jurgen Klopp leaves, Stevie Gerrard steps up. It might never be that way. So Stevie has to look after himself. He has to do what's right for his career. And I think this opportunity has come along just at the right time.
His interview for the Villa job lasted 5 hours. Christian Perslow said it was an outstanding interview involving a PowerPoint presentation. Gerrard telling them how he wants to implement this possession style of football at Aston Villa. How successful do you think that style can be with a team who are in the bottom half of the Premier League?
Well, I think he's got to mix things up. He's got to make sure that that's tough to beat. Stevie's team, obviously, up at Rangers, has got to be mainly attacking, because most of the games you're going to have most of the ball, you've got to do things like that. At Aston Villa at the moment, 2 points above the relegation zone, you know, you've got to think not all defensively. You've got to make sure you're going to be hard to beat, because you start picking up a few goals, the wins then will fall. If you're getting beat all the time, you're playing nice attractive football, you're getting beat 3-2, everybody say, oh yeah, but it's the cyber football. No, it's not. Fans like to see winning football, and I think that is the only way that Stevie, and as he said, it's coming up the first game against Brighton, they have to hit the ground running and make sure that they start winning games. And it's not all going to be about flair. That will come. You've got to have an idea, and I think Stevie in a PowerPoint presentation will look at all aspects of the game. Not just, you know, oh, it's lovely and it's attacking football the way he's played it at Rangers.
Mm. One of the things that stuck out to me from reading Stephen Gerrard this week is what he had to say about Gerard Houllier. Obviously, the connection there with Aston Villa and with Liverpool. He paid tribute to him and said he'd be forever in debt to him in terms of how he looked after him, the communication with his parents, and Gerrard, I guess, making that step up to be a top-class footballer. What was your recollection of that period when Houllier, I guess, was moulding Gerrard into this player?
Well, Gerard Houllier had a massive impact on Stevie's sort of lifestyle and what he did, as we've heard with the likes of Jamie Carragher. Houllier was always looking in depth and people just weren't looking at the footballer. They were looking at the family, the lifestyle, how they looked after themselves. And my text to Stevie after they'd won the league at Rangers was, the boss would be absolutely so proud of you. And I think he would do, because he's given them all those aspects. He looks seriously about the game, and that's the way Gerard Houllier, the in-depth view of his football, but he had a nice human touch to it. So it's great being a football manager, and you can be one of the tough ones, you can be one of the soft ones. I think you've got to be somewhere in between. And I think Stevie will have learned, not just off Gerard Houllier, off all the people that he's been with. So you take the good and the bad from it. And I think it's very important. It's lovely. I didn't know that he'd spoken about Gerard. And I think that is very nice. But Gerard had a massive impact on his footballing career. And I think it will have an impact on his managerial career.
Because I think so much, and you'll understand it, Phil, from coaching in the Premier League, so much of it is about, outside of the tactical and selections bit, about your demeanour and your attitude and your... Like, he comes across as a very intense character, I suppose, maybe is the way to put it. How does that marry with the intensity and the spotlight of being in, albeit, as you say, not a top four or six job, but a big Premier League position now?
Stevie comes across with that demeanour of his, but Stevie does love a laugh. He does love a giggle, and I think you've got to have that part of it. Football should be about fun and enjoyment, and that's the way of it. And he will know that, and he's got to be extremely serious about it. The tactics, you're quite right, have to come into it. To be a top manager with the likes of your Jurgen Klopps and your Pep Guardiolas, they are so intense. That's why these guys don't sort of last at one club for too long. And Stevie will throw himself into that. So tactically, he's got to be right. Formations, he's got to make sure he knows rotation of players now is so important. A lot more different in the Premier League than in the Scottish Premiership. So I think Stevie will get that right. He does know, as he said, he's missed the Premier League, the intensity of the Premier League, and I think he will enjoy it when he gets into it. I think he'll find it a lot tougher than what he's probably even thinking at this moment, because of, dare I say, Villa's predicament with the relegation zone. So, yes, it's going to be tough, but I think he will enjoy it.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating watch for the rest of us as well. Liverpool-Arsenal this weekend, Phil. Following on from the West Ham game, it's always hard to know if it's better from a Liverpool point of view to have been straight back into it, or if they've, you know, it's been a positive thing for them almost to have been stewing over this for the last couple of weeks.
No, I would rather have had another game straight after.
Would you?
It and make sure you get sort of back on the bike. This is... You just hope with the game before that, the Brighton game, draw and that, and then having the game against... I know we've had the European game, but it's just... You want to sort of get back into it straight away and have that sort of... The Premier League is coming. And it's a massive game. Arsenal is always one of the big games, always one of the big attractions in the Anfield calendar. And it's proved... quite fruitful for Liverpool over the past. So I think it is really sort of welcome at this time. Coming back to Anfield, I think Liverpool will be ready for it. Mm. Arsenal are probably going, well, we could have done without Liverpool getting beaten the last match, because they're going to be absolutely even more up for it.
Yeah.
Well, what area is concerning you most about Liverpool at the moment, if you had to pick one?
Well, without being a tactical genius, I think the set plays... obviously a bit of a worry, the way people surround it. And I don't care what anybody will say, whether I'm sort of looking through blinkers or not, I still believe that the two goals that Alisson was responsible, he should have done better with them. But Antonio, Maud Nagbonne, actually pushes him underneath the ball. You can see where his arm goes into him. And then the other one, Antonio's doing exactly the same. Ashley Barnes of Burnley syndrome, standing in front, making no attempt to go for the ball, and is literally impeding Alisson. He's got his arms there to stop him actually moving. That is not legal. I don't in any form. But I think that is the area where you would be sort of concerned. And my goodness, dare I say it, if Arsenal haven't been doing the homework, they will do exactly the same and surround Alisson tomorrow.
They've been good at set pieces so far this season, Arsenal. I think they've, like, a couple of games into the season, they're already outperformed their goals from set pieces in the total of last year. Are they still flaky, Phil, Arsenal, or is it still going to take a little bit more time to prove that they're not?
They've had a great run, haven't they? They've been unbeaten in 10 games in all comps, unbeaten in 8 in the Premier League, but they're still away from home. You know, they've only scored 3 goals, which will be concerning Mikel Arteta. Only Norwich they've scored only 2 away from home. So it will be a concern for them in how you turn around that. But listen, Arteta's still in that stage where, yes, they can be flaky at the back. But again, it's what we were saying about Stevie Gerrard. You know, if you can sort out your defence, and I don't think he's got that completely right, at least it gives you chances in games. And he's done that, Mikel Arteta. I always believed that he should be given a bit more time. He does seem a good coach, but he's got to get his basics right in between. This, as I say, has been very fruitful for Liverpool. He's scored lots of goals in these games. And I'm hoping, as a Liverpool fan, that it continues tomorrow.
Yeah, and maybe another area of concern, concession, obviously, goals that we've mentioned, concerns at the back, a couple of injuries around the middle as well, Phil. I don't know if that's the root of some of it, but I know that he's gone for 9 different midfield combinations across the course of the season, some to do with injury, some to do with form. Like, is there also a point where they're feeling the pinch of Wijnaldum's loss now, or do you see it slightly differently?
Yeah, Wijnaldum, I always thought, was a fantastic footballer, a great footballer. And you will. But Gini Wijnaldum was always going to leave Liverpool. And I told that to lots of people 18 months before all the words that were coming out from him. I said, it's all the words of somebody running the contract down. And it doesn't matter what Liverpool were going to offer him. So the Gini Wijnaldum thing is gone, done, dusted. Now I think we have our midfield, which is now the equivalent to what we had at the back last year. The injuries are piling up. We're getting down to the bare bones of it. All start with the unfortunate injury to Harvey Elliott. And then Keita just seems to be injured all the time. You can't rely upon saying, Milner should be fit. I would like to think Jordan Henderson, it was just protection of an injury. I'm hoping that I see he was training, but not with all the squad in the last couple of days. Thiago hopefully should be back. But it is, they're getting down to the bare bones in that area. And it is, as you said as well, which is the best functioning 3 in there. And I think that is going to be important as well.
What's your view on that?
Sorry?
What is the best functioning 3?
Well, the best functioning 3, I think at this moment in time, if the fit, I think it's if you get the likes of James Milner, I know he's a lot older, Henderson, but those two on both sides of Fabinho in the centre, because Fabinho does give that protection to the back two, and the energy of the other two can go about and set patterns and closing down. I always feel like at the moment that is Liverpool's best 3. You'd be amazed because you're saying no Thiago in there. I still think it takes him, from what I've seen of him at Liverpool, it takes him maybe 5 or 6 games before he's actually up to speed when he comes back in games. So Milner is normally super fit and he's quite simply, he gets into my team.
Yeah. Like, I mean, one of the other things, obviously, is this thing of, and you mentioned the Brighton game a bit earlier, but dropping points from winning positions in a way that just hasn't been Liverpool. Certainly in the title-winning season, they've already overshot overshot their record for the entire season already this season, if you compare it to a couple of years ago. Twice in front against City, obviously it didn't last long. You mentioned the Brighton game as well. Almost from an opposition point of view, Phil, if you're playing Liverpool now in a way that previously it would have been, will Liverpool get ahead and they're going to kill us from here no matter what happens? And it's not the mindset now of the opponents.
No, well, it's a lot of teams are like that. They'll set up and normally if you went a goal ahead, other teams would break out and trying to sort of change and and go and try and get something back in the game. Now they go, no, at 1-0, let's just sit there. Let's be sort of quite happy with this. Even at 2-0, some teams just sit back. So this seems to be the way. Listen, Brighton were a very good team and worked their way back into that game against Liverpool. And totally, listen, I was happy for the 90-plus minutes that were up, because if anybody was going to score, it was going to be Brighton. It was a concern. And I think that is an area also for Jürgen that he needs to look at. Is we play some wonderful football, some great stuff in the early part of the games. We absolutely blew Brighton away, some fantastic football. But at certain times, and I don't want to get back to that position where you actually need 3 goals to be comfortable, is that we have to put these teams to bed. We have to make sure we do take our chances. But also more concentration at the back, and we do not get sloppy.
Yeah, and I mean, the only way to do all of that is obviously get a few results on the pitch and iron all that stuff out. We'll see how that unfolds. Arsenal's very settled. What's your expectation then, Phil, for
well,
that game?
I do think, and with sort of Liverpool enjoying this fixture, I do expect Liverpool to win. And with Arsenal only scoring 3 away goals, I would hope that Liverpool will keep a clean sheet as well, guys.
Yeah. Can I ask you one quick one before we let you away? There's been a lot of chat about Brendan Rodgers and United, maybe increased. It's been increased over the last while. He said that he's fully committed to Leicester. It did sort of remind me of the Stevie G comment just before he left Rangers that, you know, do I not look settled? You know, so there could be a little bit of that. But that notwithstanding, a good fit for United?
I think he'd be a very good fit for United. I really do. He's a very, very good coach. And I know what Brendan is. Brendan will be saying to Manchester United, look, I'm not putting my head on the chopping block and saying, oh, yes, I'm interested in. If you're interested in me, you'll be interested when you come and you're giving me the job. And then I'll put my head above the parapet and go, well, thank you very much. It's one of the biggest jobs in the world. And you cannot just turn it down. But at the moment, if I'm only in it with another 6 people, sorry, I'm quite happy at Leicester City.
It would leave a bad taste, would it, in Liverpool fans' mouths?
Well, I don't think he was ever committed, was he? I mean, as a Liverpool fan, he did fantastic for Liverpool. Absolutely brilliant. I don't think it'll be that same thing as Rafa Benitez going to Everton after what Rafa Benitez did. But, no, Brendan Rodgers, I wish him the best of luck. I think he's a fantastic coach. He's a really good guy. And I think he'll do really well for Manchester United.
Yeah. All right, Phil Thompson. Thanks a million.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Right, it is 2 minutes past 9, and we're going to turn our attention back to football now. Enda Carl, good morning to you. Oh, we'll be coming back to Enda in just a few moments' time. I was actually going to ask him off the top on Jack Byrne. We mentioned a bit earlier on that he's and Enda's there. How are you, Enda?
Hey lads, how's it going?
Jack Byrne is back in the game. This is we'll get into you've been crunching the numbers, and we'll do that in a second, but this could ultimately feed into that. Back in the game, and this could be a good thing for him, a good thing for Ireland.
Yeah, it's a very interesting one. Like, he was very unlucky with the move to Halfwell and how it worked out for Mick McCarthy, because I mean, how many stories can you write about footballers that have gone to a club just because the manager asked them to, and then that manager is sacked a couple of weeks later? So I mean, he was one of the best players for Shamrock Rovers when he left. He'll be one of the best players for Shamrock Rovers when he comes back. It'll be interesting to see what it does for the shape of Shamrock Rovers, because there is only one space for a player like Jack Byrne in that team. So I wonder, is the Danny Mandrew to Celtic link sort of playing into that? Is that an agent already seeing the future for Danny Mandrew at the club and trying to get him a move already? But yeah, it bolsters a club that have been building over the last couple of years and are very much the dominant side. So I would say Shamrock Rovers were firm favourites to secure the title next year again. I would say this bolsters that even more.
All right, we'll watch it. You've been moneyballing the Republic of Ireland. Is that what's happened here?
Essentially, yeah. So look, I know a lot of people don't buy into the whole idea of stats, and I agree in somewhat stats can be quite tedious and quite unimportant, really, if you break them down game by game. But basically what I've been doing is I've compared the 2018 campaign with Martin O'Neill and the 22 World Cup campaign with Stephen Kenny, and comparing how that sort of stacks up, where what the underlying numbers mean, and what essentially whether or not there is progress happening in this Kenny side, or if we're just being sort of fooled by the ideas that we all have on our own head, whether Stephen Kenny's doing badly or whether Stephen Kenny's doing good.
So you're going to save the conclusion of that, I presume, until you give us some of those numbers.
Well, yeah, so it's coming on Team 33 tonight. There will be a piece on OTB Sports as well, sort of breaking down it. So you obviously have to take all these numbers for what they actually are. They're just numbers. You have to add context to it as well. So I'll run through the context for what the two campaigns, the difference between them are. So the format was different. Ireland were in a 16 group in 2018. They had 10 games. 22, Ireland were in a 5-team group, so they had 8 games. In the squad, 2018, so World Cup campaigns are weird because they run over like 2 years. So you start your campaign in 2016 for the World Cup in 2018. So when Ireland started that campaign, they had 15 Premier League players in their squad. When Ireland started this campaign, the 22 one, they had 11 Premier League players in their squad. So that's actually fallen down a good bit since the likes of Sheffield United have got relegated, since Conor Hourihan moved on to a different club. So Ireland have less than 11 players playing in the Premier League than they did when they started the campaign.
Are they playing players?
They are playing players. So all these players have played in the campaign. I haven't selected anybody that's in the squad that didn't get any game time. All those players are players that got game time throughout the campaign. So you actually have players who have dropped down from the Premier League, even into League One, from where they started in the campaign. So you have a whole moving sort of conveyor belt of players of where they're playing. But essentially, 15 against 11 at the start of the campaign were playing Premier League football. In the group stages is where you get into sort of the nitty-gritty. So Ireland were ranked 23rd when they started the World Cup campaign in 2018. Serbia, who were in their group, they were ranked 44th. They topped the group. And then Wales were ranked 12th because of how well they had done in the previous Euros. In this campaign, the 22 one, Ireland started 42nd in the world ranking. So that's 21 places behind, or 19 places behind. My math is not great. Portugal ranked 5th in the world, and Serbia ranked 3rd. So, or 30th, sorry. So that's where we're at in terms of the World Cup campaign and the context going into it. So do you want me to go through the numbers, or what do you want?
Yeah, give us a couple of numbers, and then like you want to be telling people to tune into Team 33 tonight, so don't give us everything, but give us a bit of a sense of it and a sense of some of the conclusions.
Right, so essentially what I'm trying to point out here is that if you look at one game, for example, and look at the amount of shots that Ireland have had, that's essentially meaningless in the long scheme of things, because you could have 12 shots and your XG, which is the measurement of the quality of those shots, could be at 0.4. So what you get there, if you draw your conclusion from that, is the Germany game, for example, that Ireland won. Ireland had barely any shots, but they scored one goal. So you can't draw a conclusion from that, because that's a one-off game that you're not going to repeat. So that's not something you can draw a conclusion from. This, all these numbers are an average from across the whole campaign. So this is where you can start to see whether or not things are starting to change, and you can put all these numbers together, and then you can gather the data together, and you can make your conclusion on whether things are actually changing. So the top line figures, I would say, is that things are changing, but not in the dramatic sense that we might imagine. So it is obvious that Ireland have tried to change their style, because their possession has gone way up. In 2018, the average possession was 38%, and in this campaign it was 43.5%. They have way more passes on average throughout the campaign in terms of their passing. They're getting into the box more. So in 2018, they had on average 18 box entries into the opposition box, 18 versus 24 in this campaign. And then long balls, this is where you're seeing the style of change. So in 2018 under Martin O'Neill, Ireland averaged 50 long balls per game, currently averaging 39.65 long balls per game.
It's not actually a drop big, it's not a huge drop off, is it? Like, it
no,
shows
exactly.
That we can mix it up when needs be.
Exactly. And you're looking at this, it's not the massive shift that you might imagine in terms of the style of play over the course of the campaign. So that's why it's so easy to get wrapped up in the fact that, oh, Ireland lost to Luxembourg, or they didn't do well against Serbia, or whatever. It's very easy to get lost in that. But if you take it on the whole campaign, Ireland have certainly not regressed under Stephen Kenny, with a club or a squad of players that have regressed in club quality. So they're definitely not going backwards under Stephen Kenny. So anybody who says that they are is actually patently wrong. The numbers are here to prove that. Secondly, there is sign that there's actual progression in terms of what they're trying to do. But like I said, it's not dramatic. It isn't the Stephen Kenny hasn't turned Ireland into prime Barcelona here, but he has turned them into a more passing team. He has turned them into a more progression based team. And the long term look at this is that if Ireland continue in the same way that they are, the underlying data is good. It's positive. It's not bad. So the natural conclusion from it is that Ireland will continue to progress, continue to improve under Stephen Kenny if and when he gets a new contract.
Yeah, we can win it, but win better, and is what you're saying here.
It's exactly.
Brian Clough style. And tune in tonight, 9 o'clock, I presume is the general message.
Yeah, 9 o'clock on Team 33. It'll be available on a podcast as well in the OTB Podcast Network, and there will be a piece explaining it all on OTB Sports as well. So all available in the OTB Sports app as well.
Good man. Thanks a million. End of crunching the numbers there. More detail on tonight, as you said, from 9 o'clock. Download the OTB Sports app to pick up Team 33. Much more of that detail, and also on otbsports.com. Some writing on that a little bit later on today.
OTB AM.
With Gillette. Proud supporters of Movember. Gentlemen, let's move.